I just want to, in May, Savannah, here at the end, bore her testimony. I think we all know. And, I mean, some things happened. And then, but I feel like that's, in my opinion, that is symptomatic of a much larger problem where the LGBTQ community is shut down in many ways, where their mics are turned off. And it's, I mean, Savannah's a beautiful 13-year-old girl, but we have a very, huh?
You got my age right. Everyone keeps calling me 12-year-old.
It's because I know you. and I'm not going to show the video just because we don't have the time and because Mike Norton doesn't need any more hits. So we're going to, someone should tell him I said that. there are many ways in which the LGBTQ community is shut down, even in progressive Mormon spaces where they should have allies. And it's important for us to explore those ways, lean into the discomfort that we might feel if we recognize some of those behaviors in ourselves, and learn to do better. So I'm going to turn it over. Everyone has prepared just a couple of minutes of what they want to say, and then we'll open it up for some questions if you have questions. So, should we start? Who wants to start? Savannah, are you okay with starting?
Wait, I was supposed to say that.
If you don't have, I feel like you've said enough already in millions of hits. So, let's start. Jack, are you okay to go? Okay, perfect. And if you would introduce your name.
Of course. My name is Jack, and I use male pronouns. I am transgender and bisexual and a former Mormon.
Jack, microphone.
Microphone?
Can you hear me now? Yeah. Okay, thank you. My name is Jack. I use male pronouns, and I am bisexual and transgender. I'm a former Mormon, and I've been thinking about ways that queer people are silenced, especially in Progmo communities, and something that stood out to me is that the cis people silence queer voices when they praise other cishet people for behavior that is still subtly or covertly violent towards queer people, when they cover for each other, and when they elevate cisgender and heterosexual voices, even supportive perspectives of queer experiences, over actual queer voices. So I think something that a lot of cisgender heterosexual people could do to take an inward look at their own perspectives is to ask themselves two questions: who am I arguing with, and who am I listening to?
Wow, that's way cooler than Mike. I'm Wesley. I'm transgender, and I am Mormon. And currently I use male pronouns, not for long. So in thinking about ways that queer voices and are silenced, how our mics are turned off. One thing that's particularly happened to me a lot is avoidance, where as soon as I begin to open up to people, as soon as I begin to tell them about my experience, suddenly they're gone, and not too long after, which in a technical way doesn't mean that I've been silenced, but it means no one wants to listen. That's a thing that I think a lot of people outside of being transgender and I think honestly mostly that's happened to me because of my trans experience, but I can imagine it happening to the L, the G, the B, or anything in the Q. So While no one is telling me to be quiet, no one is, taking away the opportunities that I have to to speak about it. I have seen, along the lines of what Jack was saying, people say that it's okay, that they don't want to associate with me for my identity, and they cover for each other. It's kind of a hard thing to deal with when you're not liked on that level. I try to be, you know, a good person and everything like that, but that's one of the more difficult things. I don't know how to do any more than be a good person, and so that's for me. I think that's one of the biggest ways that I have been silenced, is just that I have been avoided, and people are okay with that.
I'm Ellen Kester. I use female pronouns. I'm a 27-year-old lesbian. I really don't identify as Mormon so much anymore. I was a convert, but I identify more as a lapsed Catholic, which is what I grew up as. My biggest thing with the community being silenced is the message of it gets better. And I'm like, wow, do you guys have no fucking idea what you're talking about? excuse my language, but I mean, we deal with so much cisgender and heteronormative optimism, especially within Mormonism, that it's all going to be fine, and that we have all these different paths to be happy. And you wonder, like, well, okay, I'm out. I've been out for 5 or 6 years. I had a great job. You know, I worked with Affirmation, which is a nonprofit that supports queer Mormons and their families. And I was in this space for a while where I was okay. I had a great job. I had my own apartment. Everything was great. And then the November policy hit, and then I lost my job, and then all of these things happened, and suddenly I'm no longer okay, but I'm still in this camp of everybody thinks that I'm okay, right? And we can't say, well, my life just went to hell, because, well, it'll get better. No. No, it's not really getting better. Since November, I've been to more funerals than I wish to count. I almost went to my own. And it's when you try and tell the community that it gets better, you had better have some experience on our side of the aisle before you tell us that it's going to get better.
Okay. I'm Lola Lacorda. I am going through a faith transition of sorts. I'm still trying to figure out where Mormonism fits in my happy queer life, if you want to call it that. I identify primarily as cafeteria. I'm sorry, am I really like soft-spoken here? Okay, hi, let me reintroduce myself. I'm Lowell Lacorda. I'm from Canada. I'm also like visibly like brown. As I look around the room, I'm like, yeah, I'm in a sea of white, but that's no problem. Praise. Bless. and I guess, I don't know, I have plenty of grievances coming from a very intersectional perspective, not to invalidate anybody, but it's really hard to be present within the progressive Mormon circles, not only as a queer person, but also as a queer person of color. It's really difficult when people say that they have XYZ, and that's Canadian, friend, and they speak upon that experience, but don't validate the experiences of others. Because let's face it, there's a spectrum of experiences, not just one definitive way to be a certain kind of person, especially when you fall within the intersections of kind of Mormon, very queer, and visibly and very much brown. And in this case, Filipino, for clarification. But I really feel like there needs to be an increased sensitivity in that respect. And though there are different approaches to achieve this, I believe that we should try as much as possible to validate those who really do fall within the margins of the marginalized, to lift from the bottom, the most marginalized of those in our community, instead of trying to, you know, rail more rhetoric down their thoughts or down their throats and, like, just silencing them. Like, really validate them, really engage with them. And if you can't do it publicly, to do so in a space that allows them to be vulnerable with you. And, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's what I've got.
Hi, my name is Britt Jones. You'll see me in your program as Britt Johns. I mean, that's fine, but anyway, it's Jones.
That's on me.
No, it's fine. So I prepared some remarks, and I know that these meetings are supposed to be impromptu, and as you're moved by the Spirit, and I hope that you guys don't get offended that I wrote this down beforehand and don't feel the need to cut the mic.
Staged,
yeah, it is. It's staged. It's, yeah.
Somebody recording.
Yeah. Anyway, so a lot of the reason that I came out a year ago, so I'm bi, I use male pronouns, besides a lot of the normal reasons, and for me the normal reasons were wanting to show my kids in sort of a real way that, you know, if that being queer is not something to be ashamed of, and also so I didn't have to spend as much work and mental energy trying to pass as straight all the time, was also that I had been outed online as a way to schedule a score for a fairly trivial disagreement, and I wanted to take that power away from people in the future. She was attempting to use my queerness as a weapon against me with my employer and with my wife's employer and to get my foster children taken from me. That it was never going to work didn't really soften the blow. Now, this is, you probably know this kind of thing isn't at all that uncommon, but what makes this instance perhaps especially surprising to some of you is that this took place wholly inside a so-called progressive Mormon or progmo space. And if that sounds hard to believe, I think it used to be for me as well, but I don't anymore. It happens all the time, but often not to that extent. So how does it happen in a day-to-day way now? Well, for me, much of it takes the form of centering, or perhaps inadvertently, giving higher weight to straight feelings and voices, even about queer issues, than we give to the queer people themselves. And what does that look like? Well, I'll give you a few concrete examples from the past few days. In one progmo space 2 days ago, I used what I thought was pretty neutral language to say that for me, I'm not sure that the message, like some others up here have said, that the message that it gets better is not often true for people attached to queer Mormon issues. I said that I don't feel like there are many people that I can count on, even those that say I can count on them and loudly make statements of support, but then struggle to turn those statements into actions that actually lend that promised support. There was a pretty immediate response from a very prominent member of that group that says, I think you'll find lots of people here that you can rely on. This person doesn't know me, didn't know the situation because they didn't ask. They don't know what support that I'm looking for, other people in the queer community are looking for. But it was assumed that whatever it was, lots of people in that group would of course do it, or perhaps if they wouldn't do it, it was because maybe we were asking for the wrong things. Now, to be clear, a show of support isn't a bad thing, and it can be very good, but how can you offer support until you know what that support is? How can you assume that you can help a problem that you don't have and maybe don't understand that well? I wouldn't perhaps be so cynical if I didn't see the pattern of extreme willingness to virtue signal and give advice and attempt to teach on these issues from straight voices, but see that willingness disappear or even turn to bitterness when it's time to put our shoulders to the wheel and provide the promised help or receive advice or correction. In another progmo space yesterday, someone posted a meme that seemed to be an attempt to show of support for trans folks in the wake of a recent tweet that indicated a possible new policy regarding trans soldiers. The meme, however, was a picture of a cisgender man in a dress who had attempted to put on transness. This is from MASH, who had attempted to put on transness as a costume to get out of military service, which is really not the statement that you want to be making if you're trying to support the trans community, I would think. When it was pointed out that this kind of thing reinforces unfortunate stereotypes about trans people, what we saw in that group was very quick efforts to explain that away, to excuse the behavior, to try to bless it as non-problematic. And then what I see a lot happening is, and happened in this case, is for people to jump in and express fatigue that, oh man, you can't say anything, you can't joke anymore, everybody's so sensitive. So here's a pro tip. if the condition of you getting into a conversation is to show how virtuous you are, and that you won't tolerate your being, if you're not willing to be told that you're wrong, this probably isn't a conversation you're ready to be having. To me, the goal of a lot of self-appointed allies in progmost spaces is to show that they are good, but I would argue that the goal should be that you're willing to do good. Okay. Lastly, the cuts that go deepest are often from our outwardly supportive friends and family, even those who are also queer. Part of this is certainly informed by my being bisexual. To be bi is to have no one believe your own knowledge of yourself. You're always going to be not gay enough for some and too gay for others. I'm married to a straight woman and have never been with a man, so I've had gay and lesbian people tell me that I need to have a sexual or romantic experience with a man to show that I really like men, forgetting that we don't impose the same logic on straight virgins. I've had family members tell me, and encourage me and almost push me to do the same and repeatedly assure me that they'll make room for me to have a gay experience as if this is like a ride at a theme park, even when I patiently tell them I'm more than satisfied with what I have and don't want or need that. I've had family members feel comfortable talking or joking about my queerness when they initiate the conversation, but when I initiate the conversation, it makes them suddenly very uncomfortable. I've dealt with feelings of hurt or betrayal from family when I live my life more or less in the same way that I always have before I was out, but when I ask how I hurt them in being me, they can't say, they don't think they need to, don't think they need to work through those feelings, and ask me to validate their feelings, which, again, I want to validate feelings, but when you ask me to validate feelings that invalidate me, it's tough to do. So we center the straight narrative in mixed orientation marriages, for example, of I'm not getting what I signed up for, I deserve a straight spouse, and not the queer one that often says, well, when we were dating, I tried to tell you who I was, you didn't believe me, or you ignored it, or you couldn't handle it. I'm sorry you didn't get the straight person that you feel you deserve, but I'm not getting the supportive partner that I was promised, and you're the only one who gets to be vocal about being betrayed and dealt an unfair hand. It's the feeling when people check in on your straight spouse for how she's dealing with it, me being out, but those people never check in on me. After all, I caused the problem in the first place, right? So it's all this kind of thing that has made me, at times, regret coming out, which, of course, I feel guilty about because that reinforces the really strident anti-queer rhetoric that says that this is, you know, that this is something to be ashamed of, that it's a flaw, so we should hide it, until I realized that there's probably no such thing as being fully out. We all have to hide it or compromise telling the whole truth about ourselves, at least at some times, to avoid disturbing straight feelings about who we really are. It's not ideal, but sometimes the best option isn't ideal because the ideal isn't available. So, after all that being said, what can you and the audience do about this? I would say take a good, strong look at what your goals in allyship are if you're straight, or to build up the community if you're queer. Once you've centered your advocacy on lifting the drought-trodden up the way they want to be helped, without thought for your profile, continue to check in on yourself when you take action or say things. Does what I did accomplish the goals of the community I'm trying to help? And more importantly, how do I know I'm helping? And am I doing this because it's the best thing or because it's the easy thing? For example, I appreciate you telling me that you don't think the November 5th exclusion policy was correct in a closed Facebook group. It's valuable, it's useful. But what power could that testimony have if the people, if you go to church, in your ward knew it? Do you dare to say it where it will do the most good, but maybe draw the most fire? We all need to speak up. If we want a bigger tent for Mormonism, we have to be willing to clearly communicate the need to move the stakes outward. As the primary song goes, how will they know unless we teach them so? But if you wish to sing of queer Mormons, I would say that if you're straight, always remember that the sheet of music you should be singing from is ours. And if you're queer, I feel like I've done well when I try not to just sing my verse or my part, but sing in such a way that I can be in harmony with the voices from all over the rainbow.
Hi, I'm Chris Irvin. I'm a BYU student. I'm a parent, a spouse, a cat wrangler. And I identify as transgender or transfluid, which basically means that I'm not transitioning, but I'm still transgender. And also as asexual, which means I don't experience sexual attraction. Not that I, you know, procreate like a plant does. That comes up more than you would think, seriously. And I even have a kid. I mean, come on. So something that Britt said, when I came out as transgender, which was about 2 years ago, and I just want to say I'm not as awesome or as like wordy or smart as the other panelists. I'm an English major, but I'm not that kind of English major. So I'm going to use the smaller words because I'm still kind of used to not being LGBT, and I'm still very new to like progressive Mormonism. Anyway, when I came out as transgender, I've had several people ask me, well, then why are you even coming out if you're not transitioning? And I thought, you know, that's a really good question. Why am I bothering coming out? And it's because it's important for people to see that even though I look normal, like, I'm not. Even though I present as a wife, that doesn't necessarily make me female. And then as far as silencing goes, it's been interesting to see the different reactions as I've come out to different people. My parents, people that grew up like during the 80s, when I came out to them, it was, well, being gay or being transgender is like being an alcoholic. If you don't hang around with other alcoholics, then you won't be transgender. And I was like, what? What? Yeah, I know. I'm doomed,
that
really.
That is not true.
I don't know. I go to this transgender support group every week, and I think it's just, you know, I'm just drinking all the time. No. So, I mean, that was a really weird, and I didn't know how to respond to that. Like, how do you respond to something like that? So I didn't really. I just was like, okay, well, just so you know. And then when I came out to my husband, who kind of, I mean, he was born in the 80s, he just kind of shut down. And he is super, super Mormon. And I love him a lot, but man, is he Mormon. So he's very unyielding and unbending, and because the rules are black and white, and this is how it is, and this is how it can't be. And so for me, this me coming out 2 years ago has been really hard for him. I came out when I was 28. I'm now 30. So that was his reaction. So then contrast that to my son's reaction. I didn't intend on coming out to Toby, my son, until he was 12. But when he's 9, and in February, he asked me, what does LGBT mean? So I asked, or I told him, I explained every letter of the acronym, but I just did LGBT because I didn't want to go into QIA++. And he said, well, are you any of those things? And I was like, oh, crap. Like, I can't lie. I have to tell him the truth right now, this very instant. So I said, well, yes, I'm transgender. This is what that means for us. I'm not transitioning. It's okay. But this is why I'm different from other mommies. This is why I don't wear dresses or don't like to wear dresses. This is why I don't wear a lot of makeup. This is why I don't do a lot of mommy things. So that's why I'm different. And he said, well, it's okay that you're different. I like you being different. And I was like, dude, why was I so worried about coming out to this kid? Like, he took it so well. And I also want to say that I came out to 5 months or so before the November 5th policy. Also, my birthday is November 6th, so that was not a fun birthday. And my son was just turning 8, just barely. And so I really was worried, like, how does this affect him? And the answer was that it didn't. Because I'm not transitioning, because I wasn't out, I guess, more out than I am, it didn't affect him at all. And to me, that's both awesome and really crappy. Like, it's unfair that there are other children out there who can't be baptized because their parents are more out than I am or that present differently than I am. So I just, it's really frustrating. And, like, I don't have the words because I don't have those words, but it's just really frustrating. And one more thing, sorry. So in the LDS church, there is very little doctrine on transgender people. And it is, like, one of the most ridiculous and frustrating things ever to encounter, because you get some bishops who are cool with you taking hormones. You get some bishops who are really not okay with that. You get some who let you wear different genders clothing to church, and some who are not okay with that. You have some that are okay with surgeries, and some that aren't okay. And so you basically play leadership roulette for the entirety of your existence in the LDS church until you are finally disciplined and excommunicated because you have been too far along the transitional path. I don't even know. So it's really difficult that there's no doctrine, there's no guidelines, there's nothing. I talked to my bishop on last Sunday because I was considering going on testosterone, and he said, well, why are you asking me? And I'm like, because I was told that I needed to before I went on them so I didn't get kicked out of church. like, I need to be in church so I can be at BYU. And he said, well, I don't know. Let me think about it and pray about it. And I was like, great. Well, I don't know either. So let me know what you decide. My appointment's in like 3 weeks, so let me know. So it's just really frustrating that there's nothing. There's the guideline that says no sexual reassignment surgery. To my husband, that means no hormones. To somebody else, it means no actual surgery. So you don't know. It's just a game of roulette all the time.
We have one more person who I've got on Skype, but only audio because that's how we're rolling today. So I'm going to introduce Sarah Broat, who is from Hell, Michigan, which I love to say. Sarah, can you hear us?
I can.
Can you hear Sarah? Perfect. All right, Sarah, it's your turn.
All right, so I have a couple things that I have written down that I'd like to talk about that I've been thinking about and discussing with friends and with my partner for a couple years now, that relate to the church and also more specifically to progressive Mormon spaces. The first thing I want to touch on is hostility. Within Mormonism, anybody who speaks directly is kind of painted as being hostile. And this is especially hard, I think, for converts, and it's especially hard if you're a woman. If you're a woman and you speak directly and you speak plainly, you're immediately labeled as mean and with malicious intent. Now, add on to that some layer of marginalization. If you are a woman of color, if you are disabled, if you are, in my case, if you happen to be a lesbian and you are going about and trying to educate straight people, you can be as polite and uplifting and generous with your emotional labor as possible, and you can still be labeled hostile. In fact, if you're too nice, you can be labeled as passive-aggressive or insincere. It's a game you can't win, because what you're saying makes people uncomfortable, no matter how it's delivered, even in progressive Mormon spaces. Part of that's Mormon culture, this culture of niceness and of passive-aggressiveness on the flip side. And part of that is that being brought to these issues face-to-face is uncomfortable, no matter how nicely you put it. I recently had to leave a progressive Mormon space that I have been a part of for years that I deeply love because I was so sick of being told, no matter how nice I was, no matter how polite I was, that everything I said was hostile and malicious. And at a certain point, it felt like gaslighting. I was straight up told, you're adding nothing to this discussion. And it was like, I am doing everything I can to come off to you people as polite and as kind. And it's something isn't being read correctly here, and I realized at a certain point it wasn't me. So the next thing I kind of want to touch on is tokenization. Some of you may know who I am, and some of you may also be familiar with my partner. There's a subset of this where, that I'll get to in a second regarding that. But often allies in progressive Mormon spaces are really happy to tell you how brave you are for being queer and Mormon, or how happy they are to see you still engaging in Mormonism in some way, or how cute your relationship is, and how much joy it is they have to see you interacting with your partner or with your queer friends. But then they won't stand up for you when it counts. If someone says or does something homophobic, suddenly they've skedaddled. And that's really painful. I've had some experiences where people have said and done homophobic things in progressive Mormon spaces, and then I look around and it's just like crickets. All of these people that I know so often express their love for me and say all of these things, and I've seen this happen with my friends as well, all of a sudden I know they're there and I know they're watching because they're liking or whatever, but they're not going to come up and they're not going to stand up against what's going on. And that's really hurtful. And kind of that subset of tokenization I was talking about, there's this weird phenomenon, and I don't think it's distinct to progressive Mormon spaces, but it is still troubling and hilarious at the same time, where people will, like, if you're queer, people are just blind to, like, being able to tell you apart from other queer people. Like, very frequently, and we don't look that much alike, I don't think. We both have short hair, and we both have glasses, and we're both white, and that is about the extent of our physical similarities. People will think my girlfriend and I are the same person, and I've seen this happen with other queer people, whether or not they're coupled. They could just be friends, and people will attribute things that she's said or done to me and vice versa, and I've seen this with other people, and I'm just like, what's going on here? And the only common denominator I can figure out is that we're all queer, and it's like, are you just kind of mentally lumping us into one group together, like, first and foremost based on that? And it's a little, it's like, when it happens, I laugh because it is funny. It happens in real life as well, which is even funnier because I'm like 5 inches taller than her almost. She's a small person. And it's very strange. But when it happens in progressive Mormon spaces, it's like, especially like some of you people, you know, like, I'll be like, we've been interacting with you for years and you can't tell us apart, you know? And the last thing I want to touch on is kind of defining queer antagonism. And this kind of goes back to that gaslighting that I was talking about. So if an ally in a progressive Mormon space does something inappropriate and queer folks call it out, especially if this person is well known for performing as an ally, so they publicly do or say things that let other people know that they're an ally to the LGBT community, the cognitive dissonance that this causes really is too much for people to deal with, and they'll say, no, this person's an ally. So what they're saying can't be homophobic, it can't be biphobic, it can't be transphobic, it can't be acephobic. You're just misinterpreting that. And I have seen this happen to people over and over. I have been the direct recipient of it. And I'll give one very specific example. So there was someone who said, and I'm not going to say who it was, but I will say that they are a very well-known ally, that people who are in mixed orientation marriages, it's just straight men or gay men, like, predatorily luring in straight women to sacrifice them to get into heaven. And the way it was worded and the way it was said was so wrong and so hurtful and so deeply homophobic. And I'm with my partner now, and we've been together for a couple of years, but I was once in a mixed orientation marriage, and I was so deeply upset by that. And I contacted the host of the podcast, who's also, you know, very publicly talks about how much of an ally they are, and I tried to point out that this was homophobic and got shut down. And the reason that I got shut down was because the host said, well, I'm an amazing ally, and so it's not homophobic because an amazing ally said it on my show, which is hosted by an amazing ally, and therefore you, a gay person, can't tell me that it's homophobia. You know, it was totally circular logic, and I kind of felt like I was taking crazy pills, you know, as far as if I feel like Mugatu from Zoolander. The most I could do at that point was just kind of, I wrote down my experience and I shared it as widely as I could. And so if somebody who's queer is saying, this is homophobia, and you all of a sudden see a bunch of straight people, especially straight people who are very publicly performing allyship, saying, no, 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 it's not, you've got this wrong, in a way to defend a public ally's reputation, take a step back and, like, really think about what's going on. So that was basically all I wanted to cover, and thank you for allowing me to speak.
Thanks, Sarah.
I'll point the microphone back down to Sarah in a second. But really quickly, I wanted to say that Britt, down here, hosts a podcast called I Like to Look for Rainbows. And the people here, actually, pretty much everyone here has sat at my kitchen table to record an episode or more. And it's been really wonderful to listen to those voices and to lift them. But I really want to plug that podcast because it's super important that we have a queer-run podcast that elevates queer voices in the Mormon Church. So, it's huge. All right. So are there any... So I'm going to go ahead and call on...
Did Savannah want to speak? I know that she said she was going
to
go after.
Savannah, did you have anything you'd wanted to add?
There's some...
You have microphones. And we're not going to turn it off. But if it goes off, it was an act of Satan. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm trying to keep Sarah on the mic, too. I don't want to silence somebody. Ironic.
You got to remember, if you turn off my mic, I drop the mic.
Yeah!
Yes! Hi, I'm Sarah. Let me start over. Hi, I'm Savannah. I'm 13, and I'm a ... Mormon. And I go by the pronouns she, her, and I am gay. I wanted to say that from a young age, I always thought I would have amazing friends all the way to college, and hopefully through college. And promise, being a young age was not that long ago. And, and I came out in church, and the friends that I thought were my real friends happened to not be my real friends, and they started talking behind my back. And I started getting bullied for being gay. And that really hurt my feelings because I thought they were there for me. And knowing that I don't have true friends like I thought I did was really hard. But I thought I would never be alone like that. And now I'm not alone because I have a lot of people that stood up for me and was there for me throughout this. And I didn't notice it until soon, to now. And I'm really grateful for all the people that are here, especially here today, because that's amazing, and I hopefully get to meet all of you guys, because that would be cool. And you guys. not very funny. yeah, that's pretty much it.
Okay, great.
So just really quick, I've had people ask me why I stay Mormon, because I do have a lot of issues with the church, not with the gospel, but with the church. And the reason is because of kids like Savannah. I grew up in the church, and it sucked. I was a girl who was not a girl and was treated like a girl, and having to go through the Young Women's Program was horrible and painful. And so I stay in the church because I want to be there and be visible for the other kids like me who needed someone like me when I was that age. And so, yeah, that's all.
One thing I'll say just really quick, one thing that I think that happens when you're talking about sort of like why you stay, I mean, that's a question I get asked all the time. So just real quick, like Mormons, don't at me with I'm not Mormon enough. And Exmos, don't at me with like I should leave because I'm not straight. So maybe just quit from both sides, because I'm getting it from both sides, and it's just a little tiresome.
On that note, I'd like to add that another way queer Mormons are silenced is by having either their Mormonism or their queerness questioned. Cisgender heterosexual members of the church never have to consider like going through the trauma of deciding whether or not you're going to live a life that feels authentic to you, or live a life with someone that you love and are connected to. And you have to, the church forces this decision where you have to balance that against this faith that you love, that you believe, that you're invested in, that you draw many of your basic values from. That's not right to have to make that balance, that choice. It's not a choice that cisgender heterosexual people have to make. It's not a choice, excuse me, that the church forces cishet members to make. So when you've got a queer Mormon, let's not talk about whether, like, how much stock they get to put into their Mormonism, what they get to call themselves, what they have to do to earn that, because that's just theirs.
Are there any questions from anyone? Oh, so many hands. Yes, sir.
Yes, I had a clarification question. By the way, my wife and I want to say that we have been very verbal and vocal about opposition to the November Declaration. And there are people that have been very vocal about that. And I want you to know that. My clarification, I went to a workshop last year which includes some transgender, and I didn't know that there were any policies, and that's what was said today, but one of them said, well, you lose your priesthood or you're excommunicated. So I'm appalled that there should be anything, but you're saying that there are absolutely no guidelines. Are there some guidelines? What are they? It's just a clarification question.
Literally the only thing the guidebook says, the handbook for bishops and leadership, is sexual assignment reosurgery is not allowed. I don't know if that's the exact wording, but that's a one sentence. That's it.
And that's
an excuse. And I do know a trans woman who worked for the church for 20 years, and she was recently asked to retire because she had completed her transition, and she transitioned. She was a former stake president, and she has now been under church discipline because she transitioned.
I mean, this to me seems like a subset of other things. Like, we're the plan having as people on the planet. Like, we have a plan for everything as Mormons, and we just lack of, we really lack a plan for trans people, but all queer people, we have like a lack of a plan that becomes the plan, but
in terms of there being nothing doctrinally, there's like nothing. I mean, I've been a member my whole life. I went to Boy Scouts, seminary, served a mission. I did everything that you would think I should do. And so I'm well acquainted with the way I was taught growing up, that there was this plan of salvation and this roadmap that I needed to follow to find eternal happiness. And that never just absolutely rang true for me because I'm trans. And there's no roadmap for us. We know that there's a plan of salvation, but where do we start? And how do we get recognized? I mean, I've had really good men who have been my bishop and things like that. And every time I approach them about starting to transition so that I can get to a place where I feel like I'm at the start of my journey through the plan of salvation, where I can, you know, find spiritual peace and you know, find that closeness with God and everything like that, in a way that seems more fluid, because that, you know, would be more fluid in that those regards in the church. I get stopped. I'm told we should avoid transitioning. We should find alternatives. But you know, what alternatives are there to the plan of salvation in Mormonism? I mean, we teach that there isn't. And yet, I'm told all the time that I need to find an alternative. And in the church, there is none. Except if you take matters into your own hands and you go through, transition with hormones, which, I mean, I've heard from people who have gone through the experience, you can be disfellowshipped for a number of reasons. You go through surgery, you can be excommunicated for that. Which, I mean, we talk about excommunication in the church. Usually it's for some things that are grievous, or, you know, like things like adultery and or murder, or, you know, like what I consider much more grievous things. But something for me, which is corrective, like a confirmation surgery, I could be excommunicated for that. And that could be just, you know, any number of days after I talk about how much I love the Lord, how much I have done in, you know, been a part of this church. At the end of the day, I can still be excommunicated, but, you know, I'm told to find an alternative.
And I really want to speak to the idea that the plan of salvation is the only path, because Mormonism is all about progression, right? But if you're queer, and particularly if you're a trans or if you're a woman and you come out, your progression stops. When I went through the temple and I made covenants unto a husband that I knew would never exist and didn't exist at the time, I'm like, what in the hell am I doing? I'm supposed to be making covenants unto God, but instead I'm making it making these covenants unto this man that's just never going to materialize for me. So when I was still active and I was still saying, well, you guys don't want me here, so screw you, I'm going to be here. The more I would hear about, you know, singles wards and how great it's going to be when we get married and how great all of these things. And I'm just like, I'm never going to get married in the way that you guys want me to. I'm going to get married in a field of flowers and you're going to excommunicate me. So, I mean, what are we doing here? Because our progression has stopped. When we come out, we no longer serve a purpose in the mainstream heteronormative church. We just don't. We're a kink in the armor. We're the Achilles heel of, well, what happens to the people like us? I mean, we have no answers.
In answer to your question, I would just like to clarify that there's nothing that I can think of doctrinally that we have that addresses transness. The Church Handbook of Instructions does, one portion, limit the full fellowship of trans people who decide to come out and transition, and another... that was specifically related to being able to get a temple recommend. And then another, yes, like Chris was saying, another element of it is you can be excommunicated for following, I believe the term they use is elective elective surgery. The problem with that is that it's different from trans person to trans person what they need, but this is medically necessary treatment. So that's what the church is withholding.
Someone turned off my mic.
It was not me.
The
nerd. It was Savannah's state president.
Again, really, guy. Go with that. I had a hysterectomy when I was 24, and it wasn't because I'm trans. It was because I needed to have a hysterectomy. And I didn't get in trouble. I didn't even talk to my bishop about it because it was just a medical procedure that I needed. However, I also want to have top surgery. And if I do that, then I have to talk to my bishop. And then I have to get approval. And if I don't, then I can get in trouble. So again, trans people that do have, trans men that have hysterectomies, if they do it because of not medical reasons, they still get in trouble.
We have 1 minute. and I know that there's a lot more questions. There were a lot of other people that had their hands raised, and I'm definitely not interrupting anyone that's up here, so I did not get to you, and I have no apologies for that. But what I would like to do is, if you have further questions, the beauty of this panel is that it also exists in podcast form. So if you have other questions that you would like answered by this panel, direct them to Britt, and we... Surprise, Britt! and we'll get them answered in the podcast. So I'm sorry we don't have time to do this in person, but if you'll, we will get those questions answered.
For people listening, give them like an email if you have questions.
Yeah, sure. So the email if you wanted to email me at the podcast, it would just be ilike2lookforrainbows@gmail.com.
Or you can find me on Facebook, and I can direct you to that too.
I have a Facebook page. I have a Twitter handle for both of those. So you can, if you don't want to email, you can just tweet at those or send it.
I like to look for rainbows, just like the primary song. Thank you.
Thank you very much.